The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Welcome to the Artie Graal Podcast, where we dive into all things arts and culture of Palm Beach County. We are here for season two officially, and I'm really excited, as always, to be your host. I'm Sarah LaPierre, your local painter, and I'm here today with a very special guest, even though he forgot to mute his cell phone. That's okay, I won't kick him out of the studio. Craig McGinnis is here, and man, he's a man of many talents. A very creative, diverse, faceted person, and I'm lucky enough to call you a friend. So thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Very sweet. So we're going to dive into the background first, if we can.
Yes, please.
And my first question was, if your younger self could see you today, what's the most surprising aspect of your career? Is it the touring with the band? Is it the painting murals all over South Florida? Or is it designing and creating haunted houses?
Diversity. It's probably the haunted houses. That one was a very left field scenario that I was never, I mean, I was into the genre and stuff as a kid, as a young boy would be into kind of darker things or whatever, but I never would have seen it coming. So it was a snowball rolling down a hill. I learned how to do decorative painting and faux finishing and that kind of thing coming out of art school. And then that led me into more advanced things that were moving towards murals. And then some friends saw me doing that kind of thing, like making things look rusty or making something look like wood. And they're like, that'd be great for the haunted house. So that's how I kind of snuck into that world. And that was never on the docket. Definitely, I was going to draw cartoons for the newspaper or whatever antiquated ideas I had at the time. And that was going to be the move from probably the time I was, God, I got to say, 8 or 9 years old.
So now some of the characters that you maybe early on developed just on the page, have those come to life in some of these haunted houses now?
No, they haven't. That stuff's been abandoned. There are some funny ones though. There are some pretty dark crayon drawings that my mother still has that could maybe forecast that I would have ended up working in haunted houses, because my parents are probably like, uh-oh, better bring them around for some therapy on this. This drawing is a little bit sketch. But it does all tie together, because in art school, I think my portfolio was a little darker than the school wanted it to be. And it's just an inkling that I always had, the way the music was that I listened to and that kind of thing. So.
You know what? No matter what your portfolio was in school, somebody's always going to tell you it should go in a different direction anyway. So I think you kept the thread and stayed true to yourself, which is always the right thing to do when it comes to the arts.
Especially in art school when you're, you know, doing the derivative stuff and learning the ropes and straight up ripping people off to find your own style. Yeah. But if you stay true to yourself, even if it's subconsciously, which it definitely was at a young age, you're gonna land on a good spot, and that's where I'm blessed to be right now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your parents, and I know you grew up in a really creative household, artists, musicians. How do you think that kind of upbringing directed you into a career in the arts?
I didn't get to see a lot of it. I want to be clear about that. I do say that was always part of it, because I feel like it's like a, maybe not a genetic thing, but a spiritual thing. Like it runs through the energy of the family, because a lot of the musicians on my mother's side were talking big band era times, right? I didn't even get to meet most of these people, but it was there. My grandfather was a cornet player and a singer and leader of a band type of thing. And so I got to see that, you know, not happen, but have it be a story at the Thanksgiving dinner or whatever. So that inspired me. And then watching my mom draw, you know, I'd be like, Mom, draw me a Spider-Man when I was a little kid. And she would draw it. And I would just sit and watch her draw. And I would doodle my little weird stuff and whatever. And that just pushed me down the road. I was just fascinated by it. It didn't hurt that I was complete trash at sports. And I was okay at music. I did a lot of singing and stuff up to the point where my voice changed. And then I was bummed out. So I stopped. But it pushed me down the road. My dad's side has a lot of creative people too that played instruments and things like that. My grandmother was great at drawing and knitting things and all that. So I just that was always the answer for me. If a guidance counselor was like, what do you think you're going to do? There was no doubt. Mm. So that was kind of good. I mean, I don't know how they felt about it, but my parents were supportive of it. You know, I didn't get the you're going to starve kid thing. I did get that from friends' parents, like, oddly enough.
It's going to come from somewhere.
But I was like, pshaw. You know?
Yeah.
Your dad works at Radio Shack.
Well, I mean,
sick burn.
No judgment, but don't judge me. Right. I'm 17 years old. I'm all gone. Yeah. Home,
wait a minute, but that was when Radio Shack was probably in its heyday, so that might have been a good career at the time.
I think he thought he was hot stuff. So I mean, he gave me the unsolicited advice that I was really looking for.
Yeah. Look at you now.
No, nice man. He meant well. Whatever. But they were supportive all the way through, and so far as my mom even helping with the, you know, to pay for it and that kind of thing. So I kind of worked my way through art school, but yeah, they were there from jump.
So was art school up in the Northeast?
That's how I got down here in Florida.
That's how you got down here. Okay.
Went to the now defunct Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale, which was well into its tenure. In fact, it was in the second half of its life at that point. It was in used to be on the beach, and then it was on Southeast 17th, right by Davie Boulevard. Good school, learned a good bit, had my couple of favorite teachers that also got me where I am right now. My painting teacher, Mimi Botscheller, was one of my favorite, shout out Mimi, one of my favorite teachers, and stole a bunch of style points and techniques from her that I'm still using, I used earlier today.
Earlier today being on a mural site, right?
Yes.
So is that a mural you can talk about right now?
It's top secret.
It's top secret? Okay. Well, we can talk about another mural too. I mean, there's many of them in South Florida at this point. There's a lot of places where you can go and see Craig McInnes in full form, like Hullabaloo. Where else downtown? Kapow on Clematis. Is it the Bukan Sandwich Shop with your giant flamingo? That's on South Dixie, Last Weekend.
And last but not least, the Cultural Council, the South Facing Wall of the Cultural Council, which was the most involved project that I've ever been blessed with. It was, I'm not laughing at blessed, I really am, but when I say blessed, it means it was a huge learning curve.
Sure.
And super humbling, both physically, mentally, and artistically, because I over-designed it, which is like, you know, one of my traits. I'm like, I'm going to get this job.
The artist curse, you want to put all of these details in there. And then, I mean, how big is that wall? It's a massive building.
40 tall, 36 tall, 50 wide or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So and all of it's done on a lift, or what were you up on?
The entire time on a lift.
Yeah.
Because it started at, it starts at 10 foot up because they wanted a blank spot at the bottom and or 12 and up. And yeah, the whole time on the lift, south facing. So the sun's never not on the wall. It was in August. So it rained whenever he wanted.
Right.
Whenever it was in the
Thanks,
groove.
Thanks, Florida.
One little cloud was like, you're done. But all of that aside, fantastic. Fantastic experience. Honored to be chosen for that because there was a good field of artists that were up for that, as there should be. Iconic wall.
Yeah.
We were taking down Eduardo Cobra, who's a world-renowned muralist. It's on the cultural institution of the county. Everything about it was fantastic.
And it's a beautiful work. Do you want to tell us about the kind of inspiration and background of the image that you created? And maybe it'll inspire some people to go visit in person.
Sure. I would love for you guys to go visit. So it's on the south facing. So don't be confused. It's when you're on Lake Avenue and you get to the Cultural Council, you need to go down the little side street and look on the back of their building. It's called Interconnected. The good thing about this is a client. I love when a client knows what they want. It's a lot tougher when they don't. They know what they don't want is what is more often what occurs. The call had it laid out like we want to represent community and we were connectivity and all these things. And so I just went right for it. And I usually another thing that was good about this that created growth for me was that I usually try to find a way to put my spin on it. Because I'm so addicted to making sure that I have my style in it and that I'm going to be just elated with every brushstroke. but it wasn't about that. It was about, all right, let me nail this call right on the nose and leave my whatever surrealistic tendencies or the things that I enjoy doing artistically just out of the mix. And it worked. So I learned something there, too. I guess that's another little shred of ego that can be shaved off processes like these. And especially in the commercial realm, that really helps because it just really has someone wants something and you're bringing them that service. And I guess I graduated to another thought process. So it was great about that. So it's about our connection with nature, our connection with each other as a community, regardless of race or creed or that kind of thing. All the things that are that have been societal talking points lately more than ever, mm-hmm. which I love. Sometimes it gets over-talked and there's not enough action. And hopefully the mural is a bridge between people to go and discuss things that might be uncomfortable or might be something they've never thought of before. And that's what art in general should do. And at that scale, it's kind of, you can't not think.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, whether you get bummed out, I don't know how you would, but whatever it is, if the art does something, right, then it's doing its job. And so I think it's going to do its job. It does it for me now that I'm objective, now that I'm standing on the ground and looking at it. Like, I do feel like a little warm and fuzzy about it. You know, it's not a typical commercial mural.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing even to, you know, be as an artist, objective about your own work is challenging. Stand back and appreciate it from a different, man.
Why did I make that blue, you know, and overthinking and all that.
Yeah.
But after the fact, yes. And seeing other people's reactions to it at the ceremony where it was unveiled was very nice, also humbling.
And the space across from it they're utilizing is kind of like a wellness outdoor space. I think they're going to have different programming, like maybe some yoga or some kind of relaxation things out there for
and
the community.
Sets the tone.
Yeah.
It's a very lovely little space, nice little fluffy grass area where they have done things. They've had music ensembles and things like that. And yeah, that shining down on it is a really cool thing. So that tied into it as well, talking about wellness and connection to earth and that kind of thing.
So some other career highlights. You have a pretty long list. I'm just going to read from it, actually. Musician, muralist, illustrator, creative director, and many more. What's been the most unexpected project that you've taken on so far?
I would circle back to Fright Nights for sure. It was a door that opened that I shoved my foot in because I was like, oh, I get a chance to be weird and I can punch a clock and actually get, you know, or have a contract and actually get paid to do this weird stuff. So that one came out of nowhere and I've had such a good time seeing it through. It's 22 years now. I'm definitely aging myself out. Been there 22 years. I haven't been creative director the whole time. It was a true story of working my way up rung after rung. And my friend Alex and I started, literally, we were just building and painting and doing all that stuff and scaring people. My favorite part. And then eventually that became where we were doing a good job at that. So they said, hey, do you want to take on all the haunted houses instead of just the one that you guys are working on? And so on and so on. So now he's director of operations for the fairgrounds itself.
Oh, wow.
He went from a young punk to that. And I went from a young punk to creative director of just that one event. I do other things with the fair, but not at that capacity. So yeah. Very unexpected.
And so every year you're designing new houses. That's how it works, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're still getting into character. And
that's the best. It's the best part.
And that's the full, I mean, the makeup, the like the costume, you're out there, the teeth.
Head to toe.
Yeah.
So I'm blessed to be, and so is Hinata, my wife. We're blessed to be out on the midway. I think that's one of the most exhilarating things because there's no predetermined thing that I'm going to do. I am playing off the, it's pure improv.
Yeah.
But really, I just heckle. I get scares, but my main thing is to heckle people. You know?
That's kind of your character though, right?
Yeah. It's fun. I made a character that can do that. Yeah, make fun of their haircut. It's like the lowest comedy.
What a dream role.
Yeah, it's like a constant middle schooler. That's what he is, but very unexpected path, and I love that it happened to me.
So what kind of skills have you added to maybe your fine arts realm toolbox from doing something like Fright Nights for 22 years?
That's a great question. I got to, by default, learn special effects makeup. Now, I couldn't go work on a movie unless it was a low-budget, like B-movie kind of thing. But I did add that to my portfolio because I wanted to do my own makeup. I'm like, if I can paint a canvas, I can paint my face. And it's not the same, but it came around. So now I can whip through that and I can help someone else with theirs. So that was a cool thing to add. And it definitely bumped up my painting skills as well. Because there's not a lot of desired outcome there. You can make something messy and it's still going to be okay in context. It's kind of like... Mm-hmm. You know, if the lighting is right and you did a good enough job. So I had the freedom to make a lot of mistakes and hit a lot of learning curves there with manipulating acrylic paint, water-based things, yeah, and stains and other things like that. Even carving foam, I got to carve some foam. I mean, it's all over the place because every year is, like you said, a different theme. So oftentimes we have to find ways to bring these themes to life. So I've been lucky to add a bunch of stuff, which allows me to say yes to more projects. And, you know, hopefully I'll have a clone sometime and I'll be able to say yes to all of it.
Yeah, you stay nice and busy. It's a good problem to have.
I'm saying no more than ever, but that's not saying a lot because I've just been like, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Will it fit on the calendar? That's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about whether I want to do it.
Is it an interesting project that you want to be a part of? You'll find a way to fit it in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. So community involvement, let's get into that chapter. You've been a part of the Peach Art Collective.
Yes.
And you've been kind of leading that space and really been there since before it began almost.
Yes, for sure.
And that's where, you know, we got to be neighbors in our studios for a while, which was a great time.
Yes, it was.
Tell us about how that started and how kind of that's grown over the past couple of years.
Sure. The Peach is the brainchild of one Rodney Mayo. Rodney Mayo is the mastermind behind the Subculture Group, which is a lot of the restaurants you just mentioned, your Kapow's, your Howley's, your Hullabaloo, Respectable Street, the nightclub that's been on Clematis for 40 years. That was his first venture. So he grew up in the arts. His sister ran an art collective in New York before art collectives were a thing. We're talking like many, many years ago. I probably wasn't even born, maybe. And he always wanted to do an art collective. So lo and behold, after, you know, 37, 38 years of doing all of these clubs and restaurants and things like that, he finally got his art collective. I'm a longtime collaborator of Rodney's. He's given me a lot of work and he has helped me to build my career. I've built my career. A lot of it has been built on Rodney's coattails. The man doesn't stop making entities and each of them has like an artistic edge to it. So murals have been a big part of that. That's how I cut my teeth. So I was kind of in his spotlight, so to speak, or in his circle. And when it came time to find someone to manage and run it, the art collective program itself, he reached out to me. And the timing couldn't have been better. I was losing my current studio, which was in Northwood. And we needed to move as well because everything was changing up there in Northwood, still is. And it was just perfect timing. So I landed there like literally right after everything ended in Northwood. And it's been going great ever since, with a lot of bumps, though. I can't understate, and you got to experience that, of figuring out how to run an art collective. How many art collectives have I run? Zero. I mean, sort of one now. But after 3 years, it's starting to, you know, the gears are meshing, and it's not as rough and tumble.
And at the same time, community awareness is becoming more and more. People are really starting to know that the Peach exists. And for those of you who don't, it is in West Palm Beach. It's on Georgia Avenue. It's a refurbished and redesigned warehouse space that now hosts 6 artist studios. And they're doing monthly events. You have an art walk every first Saturday of the month. You're doing different workshops in the studios. There's a pretty wide variety now of genres of art there, including fiber art and clothing design, painting, mixed media, screen printing, ceramics. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. And then there's a restaurant on site too, El Segundo's there.
Yes, it's a little hub. It's for sure, to me, it harkens back to an older version of Wynwood before Wynwood got polished up or whatever you want to say for now. And I think there was a place, I always think the name was The Lab, but it was literally that. It was one building and it had a bunch of rooms inside of it and each one was a different artist. So it's that kind of vibe where you get to go and maybe you question the artists how they came up with this idea, or maybe even catch them working. Like there's a nice touch to it that you don't get in a lot of other, because art gallery is a sterile situation.
It's a much different feel than going to even an opening or, like you said, an art gallery where things are, you know, it's a polished exhibit. You might have the chance to talk to an artist if you're lucky, if they're there, or you might be talking to a curator or a gallerist or a salesperson. And that's a very different way of being, you know, of viewing and experiencing artwork than being in an artist's creative space and maybe seeing them in action.
It's inside the mind, I mean, technically, because that's our little sanctuary. And what's different about ours is that it is open to the public, not all the time, but there's a big touch with it because the restaurant is literally right there outside of our door, and that's kind of our anchor, and it draws people there of all walks of life, and then they're like, what's that? And they mosey on over, and it's powerful.
What are the open hours now?
It's Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, 5:30 to 8:30.
Nice. Plus special events.
And then the special events, we got open mic comedy. There's been live music happening. And again, like you said, there's workshops and seminars happening in each studio individually, at least one per studio per week.
Yeah. So let's talk about yours that you do every week.
Yay.
Brass Tacks.
My favorite thing.
That started because of the Peach, right? It was a way to activate the space, to call people and gather. And it's four artists led by you. Sometimes there's a guest who comes in and kind of hosts the group, but it's really becoming an awesome group that is meeting up and being really active and supporting each other. So tell us about that.
It's crazy how much it's grown. It's over 2 years now, so it's got momentum on it. And yeah, it started in a very selfish, I don't know if selfish is the word, but I was like, man, Wednesdays are lame. What can I do? Let's have an artist talk. I didn't know what that actually meant, but I know enough artists. Let's get 3-4 people here. Maybe they go over, they grab a taco, so it's good for business over there. It activates the space. We take a couple pictures together. We post it on socials. It looks like, you know, you maybe get a little FOMO out there and some other artists come. Blossomed into a collaboration hub, a solution-based roundtable that is happening every single week, and people can keep coming back and say, remember when I had that issue? I took your advice and a little bit of your advice, and this is what happened, and reporting back and holding each other accountable and throwing shows together. And just the list of things that have occurred because of that, let's call it camaraderie, is just numerous. So it's gone way beyond my expectations, which I love, because a new role that I've taken on in these last few years, I'd say maybe last 8-10 years, is trying to mentor, you know, younger artists so that they can skip a couple rungs. You know, I'm pretty sure I bashed my teeth on every rung on my way up.
Yeah, they maybe don't have to claw their way the same. Yeah.
And it's harder. It's harder. In some ways, it's easier to be a creative now, and in some ways, it's harder because it's a crowded field out there. Mm-hmm. So having a few little inroads from someone who's maybe 20, 30 years ahead of you is, you know, you can't put a price on it. So
and it's free. And it's always good to, you know, get out of isolation mode as an artist because it's easy to, you know, especially if you're working from a private studio or somewhere that's not out in the public where people aren't just coming by, so easy to isolate yourself and think that these are problems that only you're facing, and that burden becomes heavier when you're alone. But when you share it, or when you even have the opportunity to talk about it, even if nothing has changed other than airing it to a group of people, it becomes lighter.
True that.
Which is big, big magic.
Perspective is key in there, and people really get things off their chest.
And actually, I want to shout out to one of the people who I met through Brass Tacks. He is going to be an emerging artist this year.
Quinn?
Yep. Quinn is going to be in the emerging artist section at Artie Gras, so you can see his amazing photography and all the work. I got a little sneak preview. We had a kickoff party for Artie Gras, and I saw some of the pieces there. And of course, I've seen some of his work in, you know, behind the scenes in Brass Tacks already. So it's going to be a great section of emerging artists this year, actually.
I can tell. Mm-hmm. I've heard. We do a critique portion too, and that's where Quinn brings in a lot of his half done work or whatever to get our opinion. So it's just been, I can't say enough good things about Brass Tacks and the people that have built it. People are bringing strangers, as I call them, bringing some strangers. We need some new blood.
Yeah.
You know, fresh perspectives and things. And there's people in that. The best thing is, I'm definitely not the guru in there. There'll be someone who's 35 years in the game as a graphic designer from Manhattan. You know, they've got tons of, you know, prerequisites to lay down on the table for people to learn from. So super powerful.
Yeah. So rewarding to have that space to be able to do that, I imagine, too, and see it grow like you have. Speaking of rewarding moments, I wanted to ask what out of your special projects with things like Art Synergy and the Continuum event and exhibit that you used to do, what's been some of the more meaningful ways that you think you've connected local art to broader audiences?
Oh, that's a fun one. So we went ham on an idea to unify the art districts in Palm Beach County. Lofty much? Newsflash, it's not unified. It's fine though. But it was a young man's idea, idealistic or whatever. And myself and Rolando from the Box Gallery and Anthony and Trina Burks and a host of other people were all on board with this idea. And I won't go too far into the idea because it didn't come to fruition, but we did make headway. We had a connection to Art Palm Beach is how it first manifested itself through the Hennebelts. Mm-hmm. I think you know Nikki and Freddie as well. And we started partnering up with Art Palm Beach. It's one of the first things we did as Art Synergy, and Continuum was able to do it after the fact as well. And they donated us a booth on the show floor. So it was like this first thing of saying like, hey, you've never been in a show and your first show could be on this international floor. So that was one of the things that we worked on. And it didn't just happen as quickly as I just explained it. It was a lot of rough and tumble.
Sure.
The Cultural Council was actually helping us with printing some advertising material for the other satellite shows that we were trying to produce around Art Palm Beach. So we were trying to make an art week. So someone would go to Northwood on Monday and Boynton Beach Art District on Tuesday and so on through the county, and then end up at on Friday, Saturday, Sunday for Art Palm Beach. And it worked to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Some people took advantage of it, got the map. You know, we did the map kind of like the open studio tour, but a lot more crude, and tried to get people to experience the fact that, you know, it's a big county. So maybe you didn't know that there's a whole thing over here in Lake Park, or maybe you didn't know that Delray has that little niche of art over there in Pineapple Grove, et cetera. So it was, I don't know if I've answered your question, but the connection of bringing, you know, just local artists, a lot of people don't like that term, but whatever you want to say, artists from this area and being able to try to maybe facilitate bigger stages and more eyeballs, different eyeballs that are, you know, coming to those shows.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing to think about, because not even, you know, like you said, it's not something that has been long lasting in its exact existence, but that doesn't mean the impacts that happened when it did exist aren't still carrying through, because maybe it takes the first, second, third, fourth version of that same thing until the fifth version finally works. And not that you want to be the first, second, third, or fourth that didn't work, but it's important that those happen in order to inspire the next person who maybe has a different angle or different connections or who knows what, to finally, you know, connect those dots in a strong way that maybe can be lasting in that same, same brand.
And we're not thinking that when we're doing that hard work, we're like, man, this is a lot of hard work, and man, we don't have enough people to do this.
Right.
But indeed, people are standing on the shoulders of what Art Synergy did or what Continuum did, and or literally on the shoulders of a Rolando or the Burks, from all the hard work they've done to build a scene and build a legacy.
Absolutely. So that
someone who's just shooting out of art school right now can, they don't even realize why perhaps they're standing on this plateau instead of this plateau. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter, right? It's the whole, you plant a tree so someone else can get the shade. And I feel good about the work that we did, because it was based in the same thing that we were just talking about with Brass Tacks, is that it's solution-based thinking. Everyone knew what the challenges were with the scene and what they might be frustrated with. And it created a good bit of camaraderie, and it dialed down the competition. Like, mm-hmm. my art district's competing against your art district.
Right.
No, people want to see both. And if they don't like this style painting, maybe they like this style painting, that whole thing. So it did all that stuff, and it was rewarding once looking in the rearview mirror. At the time, I just felt like we were just scratching and clawing, like you used that phrase earlier. I felt like we were scratching and clawing the entire time. So
Well, that's now the next person might not be as much, good. And that's a good thing.
That's a good point. Yeah. And that's why Continuum had to take a long pause. We did eight or nine, I always forget whether it's eight or nine shows, but eight seasons, I think, definitely, or maybe nine seasons. So super successful in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Just, again, a lot of work. And the three of us, myself and the Burks, have decided to just pause it for now.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that, you know?
I feel the way of that. After 8 years, I'm like, oh, man. A lot of people are counting on it. You know, people enjoy seeing the show. But got to say no to some stuff. Like,
that's right. That's right. You said it earlier. You got to be a man of your word. Mm-hmm. At least when you can.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take just a brief break and listen to a word from our sponsors. There's a nice little video message they've got for you.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
Oh. So I'm here with Dr. Heckman, a breast cancer specialist from the Tampa General Hospital Cancer Institute. Everyone's talking about AI. How is Tampa General using it?
They're using AI to help with clinical decision-making with the patient, diagnosing the patient, and also with treating the patient and seeing what the response of that treatment is. It also helps with risk evaluation, tumor evaluation, also with treatment protocols, clinical research, evaluating the patient's response to the research, and also research itself with helping actual research help permutate massive calculations.
So let's talk about cancer. How's AI being used to treat breast cancer?
It's being used to treat breast cancer by choosing correct treatment with a doctor's help also, and also with choosing and diagnosing it actually, and also helping with research to further along our improvement in cancer care.
It's not going to replace doctors, right? It's just a resource for doctors, correct?
No, it's not going to replace doctors, but it improves patients' experience with doctors because they're not focusing on the computer. They're focusing on the patient. So the personalization and the care becomes just a lot more beneficial to the patient.
Awesome, Doc. Thank you very much. And that was your Medical Minute brought to you by Tampa General Hospital.
All right. So talked about some community involvement. I know you've been involved in so many projects that bring people together, like we just talked about, the continuums, the art synergy, things like Brass Tacks, many other, you know, studio ventures that you've been involved in. How do you balance the creativity that you're making to bring people together and the creativity that you're doing for yourself?
Oof. Maybe it helps that I'm a Gemini. I don't know if you experienced this, but I can definitely segment things pretty well. They do bleed together. I used to tell myself, man, if I do art for business, I won't be able to do my art because I'll be burned out. And sometimes that's definitely true. But then when I had a regular job, I found that that burned me out more and I couldn't do my art. So it doesn't really matter what the other thing was, what the left brain thing was going to be. Is that the right side?
Left, right.
The logical side that would go and do this business stuff in order to facilitate me to do my own art didn't matter what I was doing. So I just said, I'm going to hunker down. I'm going to hunker down and I'm going to do commercial work so that I can do fine art. I didn't come out thinking I'm going to do fine art and sell paintings and I'm going to make a career of it. Now I'm trying to blossom it into that now as we've moved on down the road. But the way that it was done was just out of pure necessity. And I thought it's gonna be a lot easier for me to, whether it's true or not, because it depends artist by artist, it's gonna be easier for me to sell murals and these larger scale things that'll bring a higher yield than me working on this 18 by 24 painting and then fingers crossed, because there was no collectors or anything like that. So instead of that maybe money, I was getting that almost, I wouldn't call it definitely money, but if you hustle enough cold leads and warm leads, eventually, you know, the hot is going to come. So how did I balance it? Back then it was just complete chaos. It was my style.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's all right. It worked somehow. I mean, I might have ripped tufts of hair out. No, I don't do that. But now it's just become ingrained in me, and I try to pride myself on good time management and setting time aside. And as you know, it's difficult because the fine art stuff is not just a technical skill, but also a spiritual thing to some degree.
Absolutely.
If your soul is not dialed, if I'm not in the right gear, even if I've got the time to do the thing, it may not happen. And that sometimes that's a bummer because I'm like, man, I set this time aside and I just don't want to paint, or I stink. Like I can't even mix a color today. And it just is what it is. And then the other thing that commercial work has done for me is it's created a sense of, what do I want to say? I'm very prudent about making sure that things get done, right? Because I'm messing with someone else's money. I'm messing with their deadline. I'm in their space a lot of the time.
You're on another person's calendar, or many persons at sometimes.
So yeah. I have to hold myself accountable because that's what makes me a professional. And that bleeds back over into my fine art practice. Because like sometimes if I don't want to paint, you know, like I'm being a little baby about it, I'll just be like, just scribble something then. Pick up some oil pastels or whatever. And I'll use that to push myself.
Yeah.
Even though there isn't a deadline, I just know that if I make a couple marks, I'll change my mind.
Absolutely. I've done the same thing in my head many times where if I'm having a day where I'm not in the mood, I'll get in the studio and I'll remind myself that I'm a professional at this and I'm capable of creating good quality art, whether I feel like it or not, because I know the skill of it, whether it's the same, you know, spiritual like thing that happens when you're in a studio and you're in the zone and you lose your time and space because yes. you're creating something that's magical. Maybe not always, but the fact that you can remind yourself that I know how to do this, good day or bad day, and then start doing something. Or what I've been doing more lately is if I have those moments of, you know, blockages, is just pick up a different tool that I don't normally use, whether it's a chalk or a pastel or something that I'm not used to touching. I need to go a different direction.
Yeah, that works in the chalk. That's the one I use. That's why I bought oil pastels. I'm like, I haven't used these since art school. Maybe they're going to unlock something. And yeah, it's great if we want to get in that flow state every time. It's just simply not possible. It's like saying that you're always gonna hit the target when you pull back the bow and arrow. It's not gonna happen. So just accepting that some sessions are gonna be just a technical exploration and others are gonna be divine intervention or whatever the heck it is.
Yeah, and accepting that is a level of wisdom, because there's a age where you're younger and you're fighting everything and you're just like, I can do it, I can have that beam of light come down and shine on me and everything's going
to
be.
The painting painted itself. I love saying that, but it's 1 out of 10 paintings. The other 9 have to be painted by me.
Yeah.
You know?
Got to put the work in somewhere.
Absolutely. That's how you get to the 10th one.
Speaking of the work, we've got some pieces from you behind you. So we've got a new series.
Yes.
That's the Passion Language, right? And these are portraits that you've been doing, developing, and I believe you're going to exhibit them at Artie Gras coming up, right? So we'll see more of these. And you want to tell us about the series at all?
They came about as a challenge for me, because a lot of my portfolio for the last 4 or 5 years has been abstract-ish, sometimes completely abstract with no representational stuff in it, other times with some expressionist things mixed in there that you could maybe recognize. So I was ready to return to subject matter. And previous to that, I had been doing a lot of dark and cartoony and surreal and weird stuff. So, and I'm going to revisit that as well soon. But I thought, you know what my portfolio is lacking? Pretty. There's not a lot of pretty stuff. I've done some pretty murals, you know, butterflies, birds, flowers, whatever people want. But I never get to a canvas and think I'm going to make something pretty. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be a challenge on that level, because I want to just do dark, weird stuff all the time. And then the other challenge would be that I'm not a portrait artist. I've always been mediocre at drawing people. Like if I tried to draw your portrait, it would look like your cousin or something. It'd be close. It would be, oh, that's a person.
They're in the family.
So I was like, all right, so this is a chance to try to capture likeness, but in a sort of crude and graphic way. So I'm not messing with flesh tones and doing all that stuff that I was taught in school. Although I do enjoy that challenge as well. I wanted to keep them colorful and bold and poppy, because I like to stay in that realm with the colorways and things like that. So that's how it got born. It's called Passion Language because I like to hide glyphs that represent words inside of them.
Okay.
So each one has a title based on, well, now they do have titles based on the glyphs that are within them. This is early on. I have no idea what I wrote on the background there. So I started taking notes off to the side of the paintings, which will inform me of where the title might land based on the clumping of words that I've stuck into the abstract strokes and stuff. So yeah, it's a fun one on many levels. I just love doing them. They're not that big of a trudge uphill, and they're rewarding. So.
And you've got them. I mean, I've seen, you know, behind the scenes a little bit, some of the creation of them. You've got some in kind of all scales. I mean, you've got some larger scale pieces in this series, which I'm excited to see on display. I think it's going to look great. And then your flamingos here. I don't know what you called these guys, the drip flamingos, pour flamingos. What do you call them?
I stole a title from a band that exists. Our musical artist called Flamingosis. So the whole thing is called Flamingosis.
I love it. I have 2 of those in my collection and I love them. They're great.
They're so fun. Those are super fun to make. This is the end of the abstract thing where I had done that mural that you mentioned at Nikon, and it's as corny as I had a bunch of pink paint and I'm like, I think I'm going to paint some more flamingos. And I just had some odds and ends, woods and canvases laying around, and I started exploring with geometric ones, and it eventually spun all the way out into whatever that is, some kind of surreal. This one's poured and perhaps squeeze bottled on there.
Okay.
and then a layer of pouring medium to try to bring them up to that nice rich sheen. But yeah, there's a bunch of these. I've done neon ones that glow in the dark, and I had a blast doing that. I must have done 60 of them, all different sizes.
All different sizes, all in that, yeah, in that style is so fun to see in a big way too. And I remember you had a flamingo piece that was a part of a cultural council exhibit too, that was just an extreme exaggerated neck that just twisted and curved around and like went on for miles. That was great. That was really fun.
These were after that. So I started with the very crude ones. I think I got inspired by someone that I follow that was doing cranes and things like that, had exaggerated necks. And so, yeah, I think maybe the one you might've seen was, it was a triptych and the neck jumped from canvas to canvas and then turned around, and then the head was at the top. Very fun. Very fun to do. Tedious, technical, but the outcome is just, they were black backgrounds like this with the pink on it, and very striking.
Yeah, really sharp.
I had a blast.
If people want to see more of your work, besides obviously coming to Artie Gras, where can they find that? I know we're going to talk about...
I am Studio 3 at the Peach.
Studio 3 at the Peach. And you're, I mean, the work there is always changing because you're always working. Or if it's, you know, things that you move around, I mean, you, and you also have some of your wife's work in there. I've even seen some of your mom's drawings in there. So it's always something. And you've got, you know, merchandise too, right? You have different t-shirts that you do yearly, and
hoodies and blankets and coasters and all kinds of goodies. Like if a piece is long gone out of my life, I like to try to kind of keep it alive by
keep it in the gift shop.
Even just a print. Yeah. Something for people to a little keepsake for them.
All right. So you mentioned, you know, some of the maybe darker work that you like to get into. I know satire plays a role in a lot of that. How do you approach using and or mixing humor and controversy to make a statement with those art pieces?
Some of them, the early ones, were not subtle in any way at all. And I enjoyed that because I came up as a punk heavy metal type of kid. And I was like, you know, screw the man and all that. And just mush it. If you have a message, just you mush it into someone's face, right? And, you know, that's okay in the realm of punk rock or heavy metal. In art, it can be a bit obtuse, but I think it, you know, some people would say that, you know, art is to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted or whatever. So there's plenty of rationalizations and reasons for me to do it, including just my regular essence when that series started, very disenfranchised with different societal woes and didn't know how to process it and actually feeling it, actually taking a toll on me as an individual and not having the wisdom yet to realize of that whole thing of these are things I can't change, but I can process them somehow. How? Make a piece of art. So the first ones are very clunky over the head, I like to say. Like, this one's about big pharma, you know, obviously. Now I'm trying to explore them. Not now, but the ending of the series got a little more subtle, a little more on the fine art tip where someone would, if they came across it, it wouldn't be obvious. And I kind of enjoy that as well, because that's more like the other fine art that I do, where it's up for more interpretation. And I like it being a wider field of possible scenarios in someone's mind rather than, I don't agree with this painting. Because the other ones are very much take a stance. So if someone doesn't agree with the stance, then that art becomes not so viable in some way, even for viewing. They're like, bleh, you know, so I kind of enjoy that because I don't need everyone to fall in love with every piece, but I did need to make those statements. So when I return to it, I'm going to do a good mix of both. I am going to definitely bring out the mallet again and clunk some more heads. That's violent, but through painting and messaging, because all the things I've painted about are universal truths about the human condition, and they haven't gotten better, newsflash. So I could paint those same paintings again and they would be super relevant still. So I'm going to go down a few more roads of things that when I get together with my friends, I like to discuss. We love to discuss sociology and things like that. And that's not necessarily politics, because that's not a discussion. I feel it's a cul-de-sac, but sociology is more of a wide open road where you could find little offshoots. And
yeah,
side roads,
more avenues to adventure down, right? Yeah. So reflecting on any criticism that you've received, how do you navigate the moments when your art stirs strong reactions, whether that's negative or positive?
If the person is respectfully bummed out, then it turns into one of these discussions, which I love to have. That's kind of the point of art. You don't need to be like, this is pretty, and I go, thank you, and then I try to sell it to you. That's okay too, but these are not for that. So when someone, if someone's respectful, we end up in a conversation. So someone who's a, I would say an acquaintance of mine was turned off by a painting. And the first thing I do with these is, because if you're going to take it personal or you feel like it's poking at you, it might be, but also it might not be, because the painting is a generalization. So if I'm painting about Big Pharma and I say that everyone in Congress is taking money from lobbyists and that's why healthcare is messed up and that's why the food system is the way it is, that's a generalization, not every congressperson. So I try to bring it back to some kind of rational thought of, listen, I'm just painting to one target in the sky. Of course, every one of these discussions and topics is way, way dynamic, and there's a million little shreds, so little shades of gray that's what I want to talk about with you. I don't want to talk about why this irritated you. And I don't try to talk them out of it, and I don't try to backpedal what I did. Oh, I didn't mean to offend you.
Right.
I kind of did. Because I want people to be outraged. Watching the news and getting outraged is not a great hobby. But if you stumble across a piece of art, because it'll give you a heart attack. But if you stumble across a piece of art once in a while, it makes you think. That's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, if something incites a discourse between you and a creative person, yeah, that is a better hobby.
And I think in a time where, being able to disagree and not disowning and unfollowing and unfriending and all this stuff because someone is on the other side of whatever ridiculous aisle we've drawn down the middle or whatever leanings they have. Now people are so quick to just chop that appendage off or just tell that friend or family person, oh, well, I'm done with you then. And I'm like, nah, these paintings are, the thing I say about those is that they are not left or right. They are wrong and right. We can all agree on a lot of things that are definitely wrong. And it doesn't matter what your leanings are and how it got there, what your opinion of is how we got there, is how do we get past it? How do we get to that solution-based thinking again? And hopefully the painting can create a conversation where that's even possible.
Sure.
Rather than this oil and water, black and white nonsense.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing when something like that might be in a flash viewed as divisive is actually a tool for more collaboration or unity or collectivity.
It's ironic a little bit. Yeah. One of them is actually about that, about two sides of the same coin. When you disagree with someone, you're only just a shred away from that other side of the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not always that hard to flip the coin.
It's not.
Well, I like that that's a part of who you are as a creative person, that you're welcoming to, being straight up disliked in your artwork. And open to the criticism that comes along with creating things that might stir big emotions. I mean, that's, art is doing what it's meant to do.
I got an online threat.
those are always fun.
A couple. It was awesome. I was how serious should I take this? Like, it was over a poster design.
Okay. I remember the poster.
We won't talk about it here, but if you ever want to know about it, come by the peach. I'll even show it to you.
There's a great story that goes along with that.
A threat. Jeez. Oh, man.
Maybe that might be a sign of doing something right, actually.
There's something I didn't think of when I was in school.
That was the surprise that came along in the career.
Threatened for drawing and painting? Nah, I didn't.
Well, the art world has changed so much over the years. What do you think has been the biggest challenge that you've faced as an artist and an artist in this community in Palm Beach County?
Palm Beach County specifically.
Besides the threat.
The empty threat. I think I always, and this is just my perception, so perhaps it's off, and I still haven't proven it wrong or right, but I feel like I'm moving in the right direction regardless. I feel like the work that I was making, including that dark stuff, and especially the stuff coming out of art school, because that was definitely all tinged on the dark side of things and not a very up the middle or accessible to the public, I always felt like I was an outsider. And that's a very egocentric, like, young man's way of thinking. But it was true to a degree, because there was, and it's changing now, a very traditional edge to most of what would represent the arts in Palm Beach County in the 90s, let's say, when I'm coming out of art school. If there is a gallery with work in it, there's not one piece that is even close to what I do. The most innocuous thing that I have in my portfolio wouldn't even be in the storage room of that gallery. So that was a big challenge, not for my career, because again, I wasn't trying to be a fine artist selling paintings and make a career out of it, but it was, I guess, mentally. a challenge for me to get over. Like, I was bummed out. I was already like, well, I guess I definitely never will sell paintings and live off of my art unless I do go paint butterflies and flowers.
Right, because you're not seeing an example out there in the real art world of, you know, a different style.
Because it really isn't. We're making the real art world, to your point earlier about, you know, carving new paths because you don't see the one you want. So that was the biggest challenge there. And and I hesitate to say a challenge because there was a lot of people carving paths, like Eduardo Mendieto opened up Pandora's box for murals in Palm Beach County. You know, I credit him with being some of the first. There were some around that definitely were ahead of him, but like, he definitely did a bunch real quick downtown, high profile, and art in public places wasn't really a thing, and public art wasn't. So I think it quickly became something that I was bummed out about to something I forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, all right, well, remains to be seen. You know, we'll either work on it or we'll forget about it, or we'll just be all heavy metal about it and try to buck against the art world again.
Yeah.
It's like it's some entity waiting in the darkness for you. But no, it all turned out okay. But at the time, it was definitely a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've done a lot to add to the art world here in many, many ways, which I'm always grateful to see, and how, you know, active you are in the community and pulling people together and staying creative for yourself. And it's wonderful to see. And I wanted to know if you have any advice, maybe something that you would give to emerging artists who are trying to find their voice and managing like a practical side versus
look right at the camera.
This one's you over here.
Oh, I saw the red light. Don't do art. Don't be an artist. Someone's probably said that on here before. That's played out.
You might be the first.
All right. Don't do it. It's terrible. No, it's, look at this. We can't stop smiling. It's fantastic. It's the life. The advice that I have for you is do not listen to the naysayers. Do not listen to me from 3 seconds ago. It's baloney. There's people who go to get their doctorates or people who go to be lawyers that could also be starving because they just didn't have the stick-to-itiveness, or they did something that they actually didn't really feel in their soul. So if that's what you're meant to do and that's what you're fantastic at, and that's where, you know, if you're a musician and you get that divine intervention or that whatever, that flow state that we were talking about, and you know that's the thing, you got to do the thing. And this isn't even advice for artists. This is advice for humans, right? Like they always say, you know, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life kind of thing, or whatever it is. That's always my advice. But the caveat I want to add on to that is that there are resources, and it's not just like a thing like Brass Tacks. Although, you know, since I have touch with that, I know that that is currently changing people's minds about whether or not they can break away from their day job. I'm close to wanting to make an actual measurable program where there's steps that they need to move through. You know, how much money should you have in the bank before you jump out of your job, et cetera. But there's the cultural council. There's your cohorts. There's other artists. There's people who came before you that you can try to get to be your mentor. So the starving artist thing is nonsense. We didn't talk about No More Starving Artists Foundation, but I should shout it out because that is a resource for people who are thinking about going into creative. And it's not just 2D, and it's not just sculpture. It's writers, musicians, poets, dancers, you name it. It's all serviced by the No More Starving Artists Foundation. So my advice is, definitely go for it. And are you going to slip up? Yes. Is it going to be hard? Yes. So is that doctorate I mentioned. So is learning the electrical trade. So is anything that you want to take to the pinnacle and perhaps be your own boss. And that's the best part of this, is the freedom, you know, being our own boss and to some extent doing whatever the heck we want to do and carving that path to make sure that that's the case. Like, I'm working towards I think you're blessed, super blessed to be, you can just go to the studio and paint, and then that painting goes out into the world and someone enjoys it. And so they take it and they collect it, and you do that again and you keep repeating that. I'm oversimplifying what you do, but that's what I want to do. I want to start to not get rid of my mural business, but phase myself out of it and do that, because it's an absolute blessing to be an artist.
It's a mega joy. And every time I forget it, I feel so silly for forgetting it, because you get bogged down in things like whatever, the minutiae of being a human in modern day society. Yeah. But when I actually get into the practice of making art and the reality that someone wants to hang that art on their wall where they exist daily, I can't believe it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it is. It's a huge blessing for that to be my reality.
There was nothing on this, and then there's something. And then another human being comes along and connects to that something. And that something came from nowhere but your essence or my essence. That's sorcery, man. We're selling sorcery.
We're wizards out here.
So artists, raise your prices. Because you can't put a price on
sorcery.
That's
the final message. Okay. Well, that is a great, great chunk of advice for people to go off of. I love it. So, okay, before I let you go, just two more questions.
Sure.
And I always ask this one of every guest. What is one, if you can narrow it down to one, it could be a piece of public art, a cultural entity, a museum, an event that you think people living in Palm Beach County or visiting Palm Beach County should experience here?
Only one. God, I'm going to be biased.
Be biased. Say the peach. I know you're going
to. The peach. I mean, I am super biased, but there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
There's a few things sort of like it, but the fact that it has the restaurant and the live music and all those kind of things. No, but I'll pull back and say that to honor the fact that the Cultural Council is such a powerful entity, and I've had the opportunity to work with other cultural entities in even out of state, and not to slag on any other cultural entity, but ours is cream of the crop. You've got to go to the Cultural Council. It's kind of a hub for finding out what the other things are, the museum, the Kravis Center, it's crazy how much stuff we have here in Palm Beach County. So I would start at the Cultural Council and work your way out from there. So that'd be my one, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. Technically too, but I'll accept it. That's all right. So last question, final question is, where can people connect with you further? If they want to see more of your artwork, if they want to come visit your studio, shout out your website, your social media, all that good stuff.
Fantastic. You can find me at craigmckinnis.com. Spelling is CraigMckinnis. It's a weird name. If you Google me, you're going to find me, luckily, because I've been planted here in Palm Beach County so long that I'm super Googleable. Is that a word?
Sure.
Instagram is Craig McKinnis Studios, and so is Facebook. You can find me that way as well. And the peach, I mean, in person is the way. You know, come in, get upset about one of my paintings or whatever. No. Come see the Passion Language. There's some big ones that you got to experience. They're mural size. So yeah, I think in person is what I would urge everybody to do. That's I like that part of it. The online part is fine and good. It's a necessary evil, but
yeah.
So go look at my work, see if it strikes your fancy, and then pop on over to the peach.
That's perfect. For our viewers in France and Canada who might not make it over here anytime soon, they can look at the website and the social media. Yes. But for everybody else who's watching and listening locally, true, they can come visit you.
Message me. I'm glad to talk art over message. Of course. Absolutely. Good. If you're out of country.
All right. Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you for coming on here.
Thanks,
I really appreciate
me.
It.
I appreciate it.
And I'm sure the audience enjoyed it. I know I did. Thank you for tuning in, for checking out our first episode of season 2 of the Artie Girl podcast. And of course, I want to say a huge thank you to our sponsor, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. They're an excellent resource for artists, and you know, if you're somebody who just wants to get more connected into the scene here, you got to check them out. See you next time.